And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Be the best and you gotta pay a little price. If you want it bad enough, you gotta do a little extra things to get it.
Welcome to the 11 Personnel Podcast, your favorite Rams podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Rodrigue, and with me, as always, my fabulous co-host, Rich Hammond. Rich, how we doing?
Jordan, I don't want to jinx anything, but it's been like multiple days now without any wild Rams news. I don't know how you process that. What do you do when there's nothing to chase after for a couple of days? I know you don't rest. You must be doing like interviews for other stories and getting ready for the draft and everything else, right? There's never any rest days in your household, is there?
Mostly, I just feel useless.
It's so quiet here. What do I do?
Yeah, you know, it's not that there aren't things in the works. And I will say this, you know, the rumors are swirling and circulating. I think that you can generally be sure that the Rams are not done navigating this sort of free agency plus period. And I think you can be sure that they're certainly going to explore what's possible at a variety of different positions. And I think defensively, they're certainly still looking at what their options are going to be and will continue to do so at edge rusher. I think there's a couple of exciting prospects in their defensive backfield. All of that depends, first of all, on money. A lot of it depends on comp pick timing. And the formula sort of doesn't count against your roster anymore at a certain point after the draft, sometime in May. So that I think is when you're after the draft is when I think you're going to start to see things picking back up for these guys in terms of continuing to tweak and add or maybe even subtract with their roster. So it's that lull period right now. This is the time of year where this is very intensive meeting processes with scouts and executives and coaches and assistant coaches. This is when they are starting to establish what their board actually looks like. This is when they're starting to establish who they want to potentially target in their free agency class. That's something that the assistant coaches are very, very big on and invested in terms of what their jobs are, is going out and recruiting those guys and making sure that if they don't get picked up, they have a strong opportunity to come to the Rams. We know how important the free agency class is to the Rams. And yeah, at the same time, you're trying to get situated and understand what the sort of philosophical shifts and things that are happening, not just from the Rams, but and gathering info and interviews and things like that right now, but also league-wide and how all of that happens. So it's a quiet time externally. Like, I'm not necessarily tweeting a lot, right, which should be, I think, the goal for all of us. but at the same time, it doesn't mean that things aren't happening and that possibilities aren't being explored and discussed. And as always, guys, if I know things that are substantive and substantial, those are things that I try to get shared as quickly as possible. I've gotten a lot of questions about guys like Tyrann Mathieu, about guys like Stephon Gilmore. And when I allude to exploring what's possible, like, absolutely, I believe that there are explorations of what's possible there. At the same time, you know, that's going to depend on a lot of different factors as certain markets cycle down. It's also going to depend on finances, and that's on both sides. You know, I'm of the opinion that you should never, if you're a fan of football in general, you should never want a player to be taking less money. But at the same time, the player himself, like we saw with Bobby Wagner, might be open to it if the conditions were right. The Rams have certainly done a lot over the last couple of years to create those particular conditions. So this is kind of just, you've just got to be patient. You know, there's going to be some big contracts happening, big extensions happening through the month of May, I would assume, is when that stuff kind of gets rolled through here and spring workouts start and things ramp up very, very quickly. So I would say, enjoy the outdoor air. Maybe close the laptop. I probably won't be doing that, but close the laptop. Maybe put the phone upside down and breathe in some fresh air, because things will get moving very quickly, very soon once again for this team.
Yeah, it always does. And how much, Jordan, do you think, I mean, obviously we found out the details of Bobby Wagner's contract, which you covered very well on Twitter. So in case people missed that, but we don't know what Aaron Donald's situation looks like in terms of his contract. We mentioned last week or a couple of weeks ago, you know, maybe even a Cooper Kupp rework, things like that factor into what we're talking about here. I mean, these it really is like a puzzle. You can't finish it until you put all the pieces together, and sometimes these things connect with each other. Is that part of what we're looking at here in terms of how that financial landscape might look?
Yes and no, like, because I think that they've got the structure basically outlined, especially for Aaron. Like, they have the structure of what it should look like basically ironed out. There's going to be a lot of moving parts with that deal, and I reported time just has no meaning anymore. in a previous piece at some point in April, I wrote a piece about what the to-do items were, and this came out of league meetings as well. Tony Pastores told me that they were making great progress on Aaron Donald's contract. They did expect it to get done this spring, and it's also something that they didn't expect would lead to a holdout. Now, when that gets aggregated via Twitter sites or blogs, then that maybe makes it seem like it's happening imminently. I think when Tony was framing that, and as it was presented in the article, when you talk about things happening soon, it's relative to the fact that his contract took 18 months to figure out last time.
Yes, it did.
This is not happening this time around, according to Tony Pastores, who has a high level of confidence that this thing does get done at an expedited rate. And so I think, you know, you just like, it's just patience. It doesn't mean anything's wrong. It just is like, everything happens on its own time. It's not like cause for worry just because things are quiet for a couple of days. Like, I fully expect Cooper Kupp's deal to get done. I fully expect Aaron's deal to get done probably even sooner than Cooper's does. And it's just, you know, it's just one of those things, like, you got the whole building focused on the draft right now as well. So, you know, everything does happen in its own time and at its own pace. And I think that that's something that a lot of people maybe don't understand on the outside, is because they see sort of a 24-hour news cycle happening, you know, thanks to some of the media practices and landscape, the way the landscape's changed. It's a 24-hour news cycle, but that doesn't necessarily mean that everything happens on demand. Things do happen at their own pace.
Right. Yeah, and not everything comes together. I tend to think, and every case is different, but a lot of times, the big things get taken care of first, and then they kind of look at the details of it, especially a team like the Rams that's always so creative with the way that they, put money in different places. It's not often the big number. It's not the, okay, your contract is going to be for X number million dollars. It's more like, okay, how is that? Where are we going to put that money? What are we going to do with it? How's it going to look? I mean, I think that's often the case, right?
Yeah. And I think it's sometimes it's even simpler than that too. It's like, Aaron Donald's in Pittsburgh with his family, and the agent, them and the agency are working out the contract. And okay, well, you're not going to sit there and force him to come in, you know, cross-country flight, you know, just to sign the damn thing. Like, you're going to do it. Probably, it's probably going to be done even before it's announced. And you're just kind of, okay, yeah. So you're coming back into town for spring workouts. Cool. That's when we'll sign the contract. You know what I mean? Like, it's sometimes it's even as simple as that. And that's where I think that there's just, sometimes some confusion, and I know there's like a sense of urgency, especially with social media factoring into the picture. But, at the same time, just human beings don't necessarily operate that way. And there's a lot of separate things, that this group has to focus on all at the same time. And especially as it pertains to the draft coming up.
Yeah. I wouldn't be telling Aaron Donald to do anything in particular. No,
I'm like, you come in whenever you want.
Yeah. How's your schedule looking?
This pile of money will be ready for you whenever you come in. Yeah. You come
May,
in whenever.
June. Yeah. Whatever. Whatever and, works for you. We'll be here.
Yeah. And I think that was kind of the key thing that I took away from Tony, from talking with Tony and Les and Kevin Nemhoff at league meetings, was like, there's not that panic. There's a sense of security in that the process, it will be what it is. And, you know, it's not something that I think is rushed. There also something that will be get taken care of is extensions for Les Snead and Sean McVay. And those will be aligned together probably before the start of training camp. Well, then you could have people being like, well, why don't you lock Sean in his office and make him sign the damn thing now? Like, lock him up. You know, it's not like that. Like, it just doesn't work like that at all. Like, all of these things just sort of happen when they happen. And it's, you know, our timeline is not necessarily the exact same as the teams. And I think I would exercise not caution, but like sort of, I would exercise calm to people, because I do think these things will happen in a series of processes and steps. And certainly the structure helps. Like, but again, I think they already, I mean, I believe, this is what I always say, Rich, I have an educated belief that they have all of the structure of what they're willing to do, how far they can go, how far they can stretch some of the parameters of these contracts. They already know that. So, and that you need to have that, because then when you're talking with other people who are interested in maybe joining your team, you offer those parameters and you can explain why those are the parameters that you have. And then those people can make their decisions accordingly. And then you can also explain to them, hey, a crucial part of our team build is compensatory pick formula. We have 4 compensatory picks expected next year. We'd like to keep 4 compensatory picks expected next year. Maybe you should sign on May 4th or 15th or whatever day it is. That I think it's like May 7th. I might need a fact check there, but like maybe you should sign the hour after that becomes official. And then in that way you can join the team. It's a win-win situation. Everybody's happy and we still get a your presence doesn't affect our comp pick formula. So I think all of that is just, you know, the league calendar, it moves very, very fast sometimes. And then sometimes it just stretches on and on.
Yeah, that's true. It is. It moves very quickly and very slowly at the same time. And I mean, here we are. It's, you know, OTAs, actually for teams that have new head coaches, have already started with at least the off-field portion of it. And then later this month, all the other teams, including the Rams, will be able to start their programs. Of course, we have the draft coming up in just a little over 2 weeks. And then right into it, you know, the mandatory mini camp. And then you get a little bit of a break. And then it's sort of training camp is right around the corner. But Jordan, segue nicely here, I think, because speaking about the offseason and speaking about how the Rams handle their business, which is different than the way a lot of teams do, you have a very, very comprehensive piece published in The Athletic last Friday. If people haven't seen it yet over the weekend, go check it out right now. After this podcast, listen to the rest of the podcast. Then But it covers in really, really great detail kind of the process that the Rams go through, specifically kind of in reference to last offseason and putting this all together. But you also sought out some different voices. And Jordan, the way I want to get into it by way of asking you about it is, what do you think about the way that this Rams team build is perceived around the league? And I don't mean among Rams fans, because obviously they're very happy that it ended in a Super Bowl.
And I will say, and God bless all of you Rams fans, because yes. I will also say, like, well-educated on this too.
Oh, yeah. Like, very complicated stuff.
Yeah, it's complicated. Yeah. It's interdependent. And I find myself, I am not needing to explain. Like, really, we all became, like, I obviously, you know, joined the beat about two years ago. And gosh, has it been that
2 years? Yeah. Pretty much 2 years.
Two and a half. Yeah. And like so obviously, like, I'm learning it and expressing it and writing about it for the first time. But then you find, like, there's not a learning curve, much of a learning curve that had to be hit there. Like, fans already knew what was happening. It was just quantifying it and building that data pool. Like, that's what fans wanted, right? Was to have this explained in a holistic way. And it was very cool to see the feedback off of that, because people already knew what it was. It's just putting words to it. And so I think that's something, not to interrupt you, Rich, but it's just something that's been really refreshing, is like when you see some of these bigger stories that I've written shared on Twitter, it's like, it's not me having to go explain to people in the comment section, like, further explain, or in the tweets or whatever. It's Rams fans. Like, Rams fans are like, no. You missed this particular detail. This detail is important. This is how it works. And it's kind of like, it's very cool, because it's a very educated fan base as it pertains to what specifically their team is doing. And I think that's unique, because they are doing something that still to this point is unique as well.
Yeah, and by the way, I would give some credit to you also for your willingness and your ability to bring people into that world too, and also I would say the willingness of people like Les and Kevin and Tony and you know people who probably will and should go nameless here who give you that kind of you know insight that you're able to bring to people. A lot of front offices probably would not be that open to doing it, and there's not a lot of writers out there who have the ability that you have to put all those pieces together and tell those stories. And then on top of that, as you said, Jordan, a fan base that is eager to absorb all of this and eager to learn and eager to, you know, be a part of it. So it's been a lot of fun over the last 2 years. And yeah, I think you started in like May of 2020. So we're almost at the 2 year mark. If my math is correct.
That's crazy, man. That's crazy.
But it, as you talk to, you know, you've been through the combine recently, you've been through the league meetings. How do you think this is kind of processed around the league? And we're going to get into some of the details of what, quote unquote, this is, because I think it's often a misconception, you know, exactly what the Rams are doing. But in general, the way that they've approached things over the last couple of years, what do you get any sense of that in general? Is it admiration? Is it jealousy? Is it bitterness? I mean, are there any words that come to mind or anything that you've accumulated that you think speaks to any of that?
Yeah, I think there's a greater understanding of what they do and have done. But I also think that it's very interesting how it's categorized depending on who you ask. Because I think for me, I did spend a lot of time doing this at the combine and at league meetings, is asking people what they thought and their opinions of the build. And then you saw, you know, right as the combine ends, like these insanely big swings are happening. And what was once sort of these market inefficiencies of pace for players, like that market has exploded now. And so now there's inefficiencies happening elsewhere, right? That teams need to explore and capitalize on. So I think that what was really interesting is how when you kind of look at the shift in tone of how the Rams were described for a while, it was that sort of tagline that drove me crazy, that drove, I think, a lot of people in the Rams front office crazy, which was that they were mortgaging their future. And you heard that since, like, what, 2018?
Yeah, start of the 2018 season.
Yeah, right? You heard that since 2018, and it just really has not happened yet because they went to 2 Super Bowls in 5 years. That's the opposite of mortgaging their future. That's right. Securing, that's the ultimate, that's the whole reason why these teams exist, is to win the Super Bowl, right? So, and then to continue to push that model forward as they have. And so I think there's been a tone shift. And now when you talk to GMs and you talk to executives across the league, there's kind of like, well, the Rams did it this way. Well, the Rams did this. And it's not like, okay, now we have to copy it. It's more like you more so showed what was possible, I think, if you not just by taking big swings. And that's so important, is what I describe until I'm blue in the face. And it, when I'm, you know, 15 feet underground, that's probably what would be on my tombstone, is like this explanation of, it's not just taking big swings. It's also fully understanding what then happens as a ripple effect to your ecosystem and how you need to then interdepend and intertwine all of those phases to be mutually sustainable. And it's a biological term called mutualism, where both parties are happy essentially because both parties are existing off one of another, one each other, and thriving, and one can't exist without the other. Now it's different from symbiotic or parasitic because everyone's happy, right? Because everything's right. Working. And I think that this is really, really interesting, because that's how you have to think about this, is every piece connects to something else, especially when you've taken away some of the cushion of being able to just add new players via first round picks. You've taken away that cushion. You've strained your financial model. You've strained your draft model. But on the converse, you've brought in difference makers in players. And so I think that's something that when you see these teams making big moves, it's less about, you know, you saw, if you ask pundits, for example, and you saw this, you even saw this like in surprising places this last year, or this last spring, last couple of weeks, is like, oh, people are following the Rams blueprint. Well, I actually disagree with that take. I don't think that you can, first of all, because I think it's almost like, you know, those spy movies where you're trying to match fingerprints of other people. It's every team build is a team's unique fingerprint, and you can't exactly replicate it because people are different. Healthcare services and systems are different. The ways that people work together, the ways that people coach, the structure of all of these phases and various things, the location, all of these things are so unique per team that it's less about following what another team did. And I don't necessarily think these teams are just following what another team did. I think what the Rams showed is what it means and what it can mean to fully understand how each phase, both the non-sentient and the living and breathing human beings, how they all exist and work together, and how each phase works together cohesively and structurally and in a way that is completely dependent on one another for its own existence. And that's what we talk about when I wrote at the Super Bowl and after the Super Bowl about their culture becoming a living, breathing thing. Like it sort of did. It had this life to it because of that understanding. And I think that specifically, that's very hard to replicate and very hard to capture, but each team can do it if they know what they are and they know what they aren't. And I really enjoyed my conversation with Brandon Bean, especially because no, the Bills don't build the same way the Rams do at all. In fact, they're very, very different team builds. They did it in a different way. And, you know, it's interesting. I was connected with a lot of the Bills' early phases of their team because of who I covered in Carolina. And a lot of them were from Carolina. And so I tracked them very closely and studied them. And it was really interesting to juxtapose some of what they did to become perennial contenders to what the Rams have done to become perennial contenders, even as simple as offensive coach, defensive coach, and the way right. the contracts and the money is allocated. But Brandon Bean says the same exact thing. And I think there's this theme among people who have it and people who don't have it, and people who are on the side of perhaps becoming extremely competitive over the next few years or staying competitive, and people who may fall on the other side of the chasm, is a healthy understanding and an instinctual and holistic understanding of what you are and what you are not, combined with the willingness to be agile in a way that fills what you are not and sort of can cover some of those things up by the moves that you make. And I think you really saw that with the moves Brandon Bean made. You certainly made, you certainly see that constantly with the Rams, and it took everything they had. And that's what it takes to win a Super Bowl. Like, it takes everything plus a bit of luck to win a Super Bowl. So for teams, it's about controlling and maximizing the leverages you have and can bring in that still fit within the limits of your ecosystem and how far you can push that. And I think that is what the Rams showed, not necessarily, you know, a blueprint that everyone wants to follow, but I think that those big swing moves are characteristic of you need to break through. You need to find ways to find those leverages that break you through 1%, 2%, 5% better, because 7 months from now, 8 months from now, when teams are making their runs all over again, like that's all that's going to matter, is those small percentage points that you picked up in the off season and through the fall.
We just spent time talking about how, you know, educated, you know, Rams fans are on this, and that's, I'm sure, in part because they live it every day. They follow this team every day. But some of the national discussion, I think, tends to veer off in the wrong direction when you start hearing the word blueprint, because blueprint to me suggests that there's kind of a series of bullet points that you can follow that will lead you to the same place that the Rams are. And I don't think that's true at all. In my mind, I almost see it as more of an ethos than it is a blueprint. And certainly your ethos can lead you to make certain decisions that you know, maybe teams could emulate or whatever, but it starts with the idea level rather than here's our 10-step process that's going to lead us to a Super Bowl championship that now, you know, other teams can duplicate. I don't think that's the case at all. And I think, you know, any attempt to reduce it to that is not helpful. It's really not. And the one thing that strikes me, Jordan, you used the word a couple minutes ago, inefficiency. And I remember because I'm old, first of all, but I, you know, I was covering baseball. I was covering the Dodgers in that 2003-2004 when Moneyball came out, and a similar thing happened there, I think, to where people who read Moneyball, or maybe more to the point, people who didn't read Moneyball, kind of looked at it and said, "Oh, this is about walks. Like, this is about the Oakland A's and how they value base on balls, and that's their whole." No. Like that was such a small part of it. What was the point of it was inefficiency. The point of it was Billy Beane and the Oakland Athletics looking at inefficiencies in the market, whether it was certain players or the way that they've evaluated players, how they built their roster. And I'm not saying that's a straight line comparison to what the Rams are doing now, but it wasn't. Moneyball was not about, here's your 5-point plan to building a World Series championship. It was about a mindset and an ethos that they had in team building. And I think there are some general parallels there when you talk about the way that the Rams are doing things. And Jordan, we know this, so I'm not breaking new ground here, but I think maybe we can spin off by saying, in the Rams' case, one of those inefficiencies is the way that they handle draft picks and the valuation that they put on, maybe in particular on first round picks. And are those picks overvalued in general by most teams? And is that an opportunity to not have those picks often, to use those resources to get you other resources that will help your team while retaining some other resources in the draft that will help you? Am I on the right track there in terms of that's an inefficiency that the Rams look at, and you know, specifically this time of year with the draft? That could be one example, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Historically, yes, absolutely. It's been the case for them specifically. Now, I would also say that because you're seeing these moves, there's always a ripple effect. This is also what I tried to explore in the piece was, it's not now, because more teams are making these bigger swings, and the ripple effects to their own team build and their own ecosystem will then happen, and they have to find efficiencies elsewhere, they have to find inefficiencies elsewhere to capitalize on. Because they've made these big swings, similarly to the Rams. And this is where I think that's when you see the things sort of become not identical, but become similar, is that now they have to figure out what their ethos then becomes. And it was very well said. I think everything you said just now is extremely well said, Rich, because it's you know, not only is it correct, but it also does sum it up very well, in that it's, you're not, you know, how I stopped worrying and learned how to win a Super Bowl. Like, it's not a manual you're going to pick up in the self-help section at Barnes and Noble. Right. Like, it's not, that's not what this is. But yeah, that for a long time, and one of the things that happens now, because a market of inefficiencies is now becoming more efficient, meaning there are more teams who are doing picks for players trades, which means that more players are sort of flooding the quote unquote trade market, which also there's a lot more player empowerment happening, where players are now deciding where they can go, and the rise of the no trade clauses are happening, and players who are maybe due for a new contract, they're deciding where they can go, and they're asking for trades more frequently than we've seen. So all of those things mean that market, which had been an inefficiency to exploit by a team willing to do so and believing that their ecosystem could handle such risk, such as the Rams, now that space is becoming more efficient. Of course, the irony in all of this is that I did horribly in economics in college. had a very nice professor who was more patient with me than he should have been. But that also means that you have to find something else to do now. So where these picks had less value, you can see their devaluation with the stack of these trades that are being made. You know, the Matthew Stafford trade looks like it was nothing compared to what the Russell Wilson trade was, you know, the Deshaun Watson trade. Like, it looks like just peanuts, like grocery store, like packing peanuts. Like, it looks like nothing compared to, and that's what sort of that happens when that market floods, is now it costs more of these types of picks to pay, like quote unquote pay, or to acquire these quarterbacks. That's what you're also seeing in the wide receiver market. Now, instead of just getting a wide receiver picks for players, you also have to extend the guy. This is the way that market is changing. And so the Rams, I think, they were early, or they were a part of, as Les Snead calls it, like sort of that first wave of people who were out in front of this market. But now they're going to have to find something different. And that's right. The thing. It's more about how you think about inefficiencies and agility. And with the draft picks thing, it's very, very interesting, because, you know, I encourage everyone. So I really love what the 33rd team does in terms of some of these deeper studies about this type of thing that they put out there. And they put out this really great study. Now, you knew, and like I knew, and I've been sort of saying this for years at this point, that, you know, there is a clear drop off in the way the Rams value first round picks. If they're winning perennially, they don't value those first round picks at a certain point in that draft order at the same level as they value them as trade capital. And that's clear from the way that they've made their moves. But in terms of statistically, like the 33rd team, they did a first round pick value using guaranteed money and performance over value of first round picks from, it was 2010 to 2017. So obviously they're excluding all players who are still on their first round contracts. And here's what they found. They found that only 1 in 3, so 33% of first round picks were signed by the same team to a second contract. So wow. Being signed to a second contract means that your team is like hit on the pick essentially. Now, again, right. You know, this is specifically first round picks. If you retain your first round pick, it means that maybe your team believes that you have hit on the pick and you believe them to be a long-term part of your build, because that's why you draft first round pick players, is to quote unquote build your roster, as conventional right. and historical thinking would say. Okay. So the guaranteed money given to those players actually doubles that of those in the second round. So yes, we love and believe in paying players on as much money as they should deserve on this podcast. We are firm believers in that. I know you are, Rich. I certainly am. Yeah. I want a player to maximize his paycheck in any way he possibly can for his entire career, considering what they put their bodies through. But if you're looking at it specifically from a financial standpoint and structurally from a financial standpoint specifically and solely from the team's perspective, that is not great because that means you're giving more guaranteed money than the player is, quote unquote, his valuation of what his output is. And so especially, you know, between the first and second round, that's quite a drop off. And so then this study found that third, fifth, and sixth round picks specifically were the highest picks they were the picks that most exceeded that pay value, right. whether they were extended with the drafting team or they were signed elsewhere to a second contract. And first round picks generally, even if they were successful first round picks, even if they were in that 33% that did stick to their team, generally found that they underperformed relative to the money guaranteed to them on that first contract. So again, good for the player for that, to maximize any sort of earnings possible. But from a specific team building and financial structure perspective, that is an inefficiency for a team. So you're sort of right. like starting to peel back the curtain on maybe why the Rams do what they do and why they value, and you can quantify it better, why they value those first round picks and sometimes the second round picks too as trade capital versus bringing in a pick itself relative to their financial valuation.
Right, because, and especially in a salary capped league, which pretty much they all are now, except for baseball, I guess. That's why this is so important, because you only have a finite number of resources, in this case, dollar bills. And so what you need to do is figure out, well, what's the most efficient way that I can spend those dollar bills? And increasingly, what the Rams and other teams have seen is that first round picks are not the most efficient way to do that. The efficient way to do it is to trade those picks and spend that money on a Jalen Ramsey, or somebody, a more established player who you know you're going to fit into your lineup immediately and who's going to be there for 5, 6, 7, whatever it may be, years. That's efficient. Hitting on a fourth, fifth round pick, very efficient if you can do that and have that person in your lineup for a number of years. So that's really what it is. It's certainly there's interesting parts to this, but really it's, you know, you mentioned economics, but I mean, that's really what it comes down to. It's spending your money, spending your resources as efficiently as you can, and trying to do that better than your other 31 competitors, because they're all trying to do the same thing and trying to find new tricks. And Jordan, the thing I would add there is you mentioned, you quoted at the bottom of the story that we're referencing. Again, it was published last Friday. You know, Kevin Nemhoff quote about something I think is very important too, is and again, speaks to this idea of a blueprint. You can't have a blueprint, because what happens if you think you just have a formula, if you just think you have, here's our 5-point plan that's going to get us to the Super Bowl. Okay, that may or may not get you to the Super Bowl, but it's not going to be sustainable because things change too quick. These inefficiencies can change. Something that may be inefficient one season, 3 years from now, may not be anymore.
Right.
Because you have to keep on top of these trends. You have to be ahead of these trends if you're one of the best teams to say, oh, okay, here's, you know, everybody's zigging in that direction. We're going to zag in this direction. And then when everybody starts chasing after you, then you start going in another direction to find the efficiency. And that's really hard. I mean, that's why this takes so much time and such a difficult thing to do. But that just speaks to, that is an ethos. That's not a plan. That's not something you can put down on paper and say, okay, here's what we're going to do. Here's the moves that we're going to make. It's an attitude that you have to have. It's a mindset to be aggressive, to be nimble, to make changes, to go in a different direction, to trade Jared Goff right after you signed him to his contract because you realize, uh-oh, you know what? That's not efficient anymore. We got to go in a different direction. Those are the kind of things that you have to do. You wouldn't plan that out. You certainly wouldn't plan that out the way that the Rams did it, but you have to be nimble about that and you know, see where it takes you. And you're not always going to succeed. They're not always going to be hits. You're not always going to read the market correctly. But if you can do it more often than not, and that's what the Rams have done, then that's the formula. It's not really a formula, but that it's the attitude that you have to have.
Yeah, and a couple of notes too that. And it's, again, very well said, Rich. And I think one thing that comes to mind as we're dissecting all of this and as I'm writing this piece is it becomes even funnier when Les Snead will go on tangents in interviews about, like, getting bucked off a horse or something. Like, and the horse's name is Victor. And we had a conversation about the horse. And it's like, okay, but, like, this is also in this dude's brain. Like, yes. This is why it becomes so funny to me. Because it's just the human mind is a chaotic and interesting place. But I think one thing too, I didn't necessarily know if it was appropriate to put in the story because it was sort of an in passing moment, right? But as I was interviewing Tony Pastors, Howie Roseman walked by. Howie Roseman is in this story, and there's an example in this story of how the Eagles are clearly working to find the next inefficiency using their draft picks. And that big trade that they made, you know, our wonderful Eagles writers, Zach Berman and Bo Wolf, they wrote a piece about how it seems very clear that the Eagles are positioning themselves to have their current quarterback, Jalen Hurts, in a sort of a prove it year. And if he works out for the long term, great. They have a ton of extra picks to continue to build a roster around him. And if he doesn't work out, they've positioned themselves now to capitalize, not just if they need to go get a franchise quarterback with an early pick or with a bunch of picks, because now they know what the new market is because of what Matthew Stafford and the Rams and Russell Wilson and the Broncos, and I guess even, you know, Watson and the Browns, but that's a bit of a unique right. circumstance that we're not going to dive into at the moment. But I think, like, in terms of Wilson and Stafford specifically, you're seeing what it costs and what it, not just what it costs, maybe what it costs then in as it pertains to Stafford, but what it will cost as the market sort of for these proven veteran quarterbacks who are of a certain status. It's not just, you're not seeing this like for Matt Ryan, no offense to Matt Ryan, who I think has found a great fit in Indianapolis, by the way, but for quarterbacks of a certain tier, a certain level or a certain perceived level by that team, that's what you're seeing these moves, certain receivers of a perceived level. Jalen Ramsey, Matthew Stafford, and Von Miller, this study also found by the 33rd team that in the rare case that a player in a first round not only outweighed his performance, sort of the first and second contract value, and so performed highly relative to that sort of metric that they were studying. Three of the few players who have done that are Jalen Ramsey, Matthew Stafford, and Von Miller. Mm. And so you're picking specific guys, right? It's not just, you're not just saying, okay, you know, veteran X is on the market now. Let's go get him. Here's a shitload of picks. Like, it's not, that's not what it is. It also is the assessment of what you can do and how you can move. And George Payton was telling me this, you know, this is not something that they just decide, they walked into a saloon one day and shot from the hip. Like, this is something, if it wasn't going to be Russell Wilson, I think you knew, you know, what other maybe tier of quarterback that they were interested in pursuing. And I think people forget, like, similar to the Rams, who did their homework on perhaps the very few quarterbacks of that tier who would be available. And Matthew Stafford being available was like a dream come true for them. But at the same time, you know, the Broncos are putting this in place and moving their books around and moving their picks around for like months and months before they make this move. And you're seeing this now. And I talk about Howie Roseman because you're seeing this now. He's now doing this because that's what it requires and that's what it costs. But he's also doing it in a way that sort of leverages these picks where if Jalen Hurts does work out for them long term, then they have all of these picks where now it's become more maybe positive for them to have because there's less competition in the first round for other teams to use those picks. So there's less teams picking in the first round than there have been since 1980. Wow. And so now when you have a lot of picks and you have a quarterback, so they're deciding whether they have a quarterback or not. Let's say in a best case scenario, they have a shitload of picks and they have a quarterback. Now they become the highest efficiency. Now they are exploiting the inefficiencies because they're picking multiple times without a lot of competition around them for the same prospects, right? And they have a quarterback. So that's the best case scenario. Worst case scenario is still not a bad one for them because you know and you see what it costs and what that will cost to go get the position that will then secure the rest of their roster around them. And it was really interesting because, you know, I really wanted to put it in the story, but I didn't because I just didn't know if it was appropriate or not. Like, you know, I'm interviewing Tony Pastores and Howie Roseman walks by. So this, we're at the Breakers and Tony Pastores is basically sitting on this like sort of overhang and it's right by the beach outside the Breakers and like, you know, aviator sunglasses and it's windy and the water is like way bluer than it is in other places. And I think there's something that has to do with like an insane amount of money that's over there.
Yeah.
And it just was like this most picturesque setting. And Howie Roseman walks by and he says something along the lines of like, what a scene, enjoying that Super Bowl afterglow. and Tony know each other. And so they kind of laughed about it and everything. And as Howie's walking by, he says, it doesn't last. I can tell you that.
Oh.
And it just tells you everything you need to know about how fiercely this competition happens, but also how quickly things change and how important it is to maximize those leverages when you can, because you saw that with the Eagles. The Eagles went off a cliff.
Right.
And I don't think the Rams will do that. But at the same time, you saw what it means and what it requires to be agile enough to stay in contention. And I think that's why all of these little examples sort of illustrated in the story are important, because everything connects together in some way because it's a cap constricted league and everything is dragged down toward parity. So these leverages and these moments and these decisions become so important.
Yeah. And I know we've talked about it before and I don't want to get into my past or another sport, but you know, getting to the top of the mountain is an entirely different challenge than staying on top of the mountain. And that is, I think everybody who's ever worked in a personnel department in a pro sports league understands that. The decisions that you make are different. The challenges that you face are different and you can't approach it the same way. And the Rams, you know, it changed for them after 2018 into 2019 and 2020. It changed again this past offseason. I'm sure it'll change again at some point soon if it hasn't already. Just, you know, what do we need to do? It's different when you're building. It's much different in 2017 for the Rams than it is right now. And that's why, again, not to hammer the same point over and over again, Jordan, but it's what we're talking about here, how there is no blueprint. If anybody gets hired as a GM or player personnel person in the NFL and thinks, oh, well, I'm just going to go do what the Rams did. No, it's not going to work. There's no way. It's impossible to follow in their footsteps, because their footsteps have gone all over the place. Like, they're like a beach that has a million footprints on it. Like, good luck trying to track everything that was going on there.
And then Sean McVay points to a single set of footprints on the beach, and he says, "Do you know what that set represents? It was then that I carried you." Or no, Reggie Scott points to a single set of footprints. Yes. Reggie Scott points to a single set of footprints on the beach and looks around at the organization and says, "Do you know what that single set of footprints is?" And Les and Sean sort of nod, and Reggie says, "It was then that I carried you." Put it on a print. Put it on a print and hang it in Midwestern bathrooms all over the United States. Yeah.
With a nice new Rams logo.
Logo in the corner.
What a scene that was. That should be in the Rams movie when they can be like the opening scene of the movie, and then you flash back to
footprints on a beach.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and then you flash back to where it all started.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Yeah, you know, it's super fascinating stuff, Jordan. And that's why people joke about the Rams. And I mean, we joke about it too, so I'm not excluding us. But, the Rams, like the draft isn't important for who cares? They don't have any first-round picks. No, it's arguably even more fascinating than for a lot of teams. Yeah, it's harder to do your mock drafts and things like that. But if you're really into kind of the details of this and you know, what they try to accomplish at the draft, it's super fascinating. And Jordan, we're going to get into it more, of course, next week. I know we're thinking of having a special guest too, who's going to be able to share a lot with us. But we did have talk about pieces that are almost made for the Rams. Our colleague Nick Baumgartner, just about 10 days ago or so, or actually about a week ago, did a whole story about mid-round names to watch from specifically from all of the bigger schools, the Power Five conferences. So that's one to check out there, Jordan, right? Because when you talk about the Rams having picks in the third and fourth round and then being heavy in the sixth and things like that, these are some of the names that you might see come up when the Rams pick.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, Nick did a great job with this, and it's very content relevant to, I think, what the Rams are going to do. And especially, like, I think you get a little less maybe position specific when you do get to those rounds, and you look more at traits, obviously. And then Les Snead told me at owners meeting, at league meetings, that they also look so much more at intangibles, and they have all of these, they have three different tests of a total of seven evaluation tools to measure, you know, football IQ and emotional maturity and emotional IQ and social IQ and all kinds of things that they use to measure these prospects of seven different tools with their background checks. And you know, they have an in-house sports psychologist, Carrie Hastings, and she does a great job. And so it's a lot of different things that go into it. But at the same time, you know, so you could look at this Nick Baumgartner piece, and there are, he goes from Power Five, and if we know the Rams, there's not going to be all Power Five guys in their picks, but this is a really good start for people, I think, in order to look. And I think, you know, when I'm sort of looking and evaluating what I believe, if I look at how they churn through some of their depth, and I look at how they sort of cycle through for the future, and then also some of the special teams help that I believe they'll need, minus Troy Reader. And then also with Bobby Wagner, he's not going to play on special teams, obviously. Like, that would be just like a form, you know, I don't know why. You would have to be insane, honestly, to subject him to that kind of strain. But then also, like, I don't think Ernest Jones will play a lot of special teams. So now you need to find depth linebackers, because Traven Howard will play special teams, but you need, like, maybe now a plus two there instead of having Troy Reader also play defense and special teams. Nick Scott moving more into a featured role at safety, perhaps. You now need another depth safety. You know, Juju Hughes and J.R. Reed got signed to other teams. So you need more safeties who can specifically also contribute to your special teams numbers, because that's actually, when you look at the bottom of the roster, that's where the Rams really struggled last year, at the beginning of the year especially, was filling out those gaps and filling out those holes, especially because their rookie class got hurt. Most of their rookie class was injured, especially the special teamers. And so I think that's where you now have to start to look, and you're looking at some of those intangible tests as measures of whether this player can really develop into somebody that you need him to on an early contract, which is, again, something that sustains their ecosystem. So definitely recommend that piece. It's over on theathletic.com. I'll share it out under the podcast when we put it out there, but because I definitely think that it's going to be an important one for people to go look at. Nick Baumgartner, he runs through the Power Five conferences, and he takes a look at some of the guys that really stuck out to him. He's got some tape that's included and some breakdowns. Dane Brugler's The Beast is out as well. Definitely recommend everybody going to find that. And as Rich and I kind of get closer in breaking down the draft and maybe having a couple guests on and doing some live rooms here through the next couple of weeks as we lead up to the draft, those resources are going to be so important for us to be using, as well as for the rest of you. And it's just it's an exciting time of year, maybe less so necessarily for teams that don't have these first round picks. But at the same time, what we talked about at the beginning of this podcast is Rams fans are so smart with knowing how these pieces all fit together and how these players all work together, that I think there is some excitement from Rams fans specifically about the players that they bring in, because they know what's possible for them and they're excited to see that development. So I think that's a fun time.
Right. And they know how important they are. I mean, they've seen a Super Bowl run here where so many of those guys, Cooper Kupp being at the top of the list, is a guy who didn't generate a lot of excitement when he got drafted, but turned into, obviously, a critical piece of a Super Bowl team. So maybe the next one will be out there. Maybe we just don't know his name yet, and he will be joining the Rams in a couple of weeks. But
And I'm sorry, Rich, to interrupt you. I forgot to mention this. I have the tab pulled up, so I'm just going to try to get to this tab. Okay, so I did want to say, I was going through first some of our draft capsules that we have out. I was going through previous draft classes, and I think there's obviously a study to be done at some point this offseason about, you know, players who have contributed and whatnot. But really, it kind of puts it out there. These past draft classes, I'm looking at the players who contributed early, and I was like, holy cow, that's a lot of mid and late round picks, which we knew. I mean, it's quantified in many of the pieces we've talked about. Right. But I was looking at like the 2017 class, right? And that's the same class. You have Gerald Everett, who, you know, obviously didn't stick to a second contract, but still had flashes of potential and contributions. And then Cooper Kupp's in that class, and John Johnson's in that class. And then I'm looking at the 2018 class. The 2018 class, Jonah Oboom was their first pick. Now it was going to be their Rams left tackle. Brian Allen was their second pick. Now their long-term starting center. That class also had guys like, Obo Okoronkwo and Sebastian Joseph Day, guys who either are getting paid extended by the Rams or are getting paid elsewhere and then will directly relate to the four comp picks that the Rams will now receive. Right. And then I'm looking at 20, I think 2019 was actually kind of an underrated class too. Because you had Taylor Rapp who, yeah, he's been up and down in terms of production, but he started 32 of 41 games in three seasons. Right. And then you also have Daryl Henderson, David Long, who needs to hit a learning curve this year. And then this is the Greg Gaines, David Edwards, and Nick Scott class. Like these are all fourth through seventh round picks. Greg Gaines has emerged as one of the premier nose tackles in the NFL, in my opinion, and a lot of people's opinions. David Edwards is starting for them at right guard and will continue to do so. And Nick Scott may very well move into a starting safety position alongside Jordan Fuller this year as a former seventh rounder. And it's just that's so fascinating to me. And you have 2020, you've got Jordan Fuller and Van Jefferson, Cam Akers, obviously. 2021, I think, is kind of their like scratch class almost because most of them were hurt the entire season. Like Ernest Jones really was the only guy who's playing substantial minutes. We'll probably relitigate the Tutu Atwell pick until all of us are well into our late age and our old age as a little bit of a head scratcher there. But definitely a pivotal year for him. But other than Tutu Atwell, it's kind of like, you know, you still don't know what you have in a lot of these guys because they were hurt. And Tutu was hurt as well, but you saw that there was quite a learning curve to go for him, I think. But other than Ernest Jones, these guys were mostly hurt. So that's also interesting too. And then how do you slot around that and how do you fit around that when you know that you basically had a redshirt year for a lot of these guys?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So there's still, an opportunity. Like you said, we're not going to write off that group just yet because there's still an opportunity. And some guys just develop at different rates, too. I mean, we weren't talking about Greg Gaines very much a year ago, but, he hit that curve or whatever it may be and really developed and blossomed. So you don't know. And it's amazing. It's amazing to go through that list, Jordan. And I guess that's one thing you can say if you're another team, like, oh, what do you do? Well, yeah, you hit on a lot of fourth and fifth round picks. Yeah, well, good luck with that. Yeah, it's not the easiest thing in the world to do is to have guys like that come in. And, a lot of it is development, too, and making sure guys are put in the right spots at the right time. So it's not even a science to that extent, but certainly a huge part of what the Rams have been able to achieve over the last 5 years or so here. So again, we'll see. That's what makes these drafts very interesting. You don't know who's going to be the next one. A name you probably haven't heard of yet is going to come in and potentially make a big impact for the Rams. So of course, Jordan, you will be all over it. Your great coverage specific to the Rams, as you said, so much stuff that's out there. I mean, we don't need to make this a commercial, but I mean it. I mean it. The depth of coverage that we can have out there, not only from our NFL analysts, but from our college writers who cover so many of these players so deeply. It's tremendous. You literally can't read all of the stuff that's out there. I mean, there's so much that you cannot consume all of it. And that's awesome to see. And Jordan, as always, you're all over it. As you said, when possible, you take some breaks from Twitter. Jordan at Jordan Rodrigue has you covered on everything that you need heading into the draft. We will be back with you next week to talk more about the draft, maybe dig into a little bit more, maybe have a guest even who can speak to some of these things that we're talking about. So until then, make sure you're on board with us. If you're not already, thank you to all of our subscribers who are on board. If you want to join us, you absolutely should. And the way that do that is to go to theathletic.com/11personnel, get all of our great coverage, and get Jordan's favorite thing in the entire world, which is what?
A great discount. You guys, we still have it going.
It's still there?
It's still there, man. I don't know. It's like every week I check and I'm like, yep, that thing's still there. It's my favorite thing in the world. It is a great discount. When you subscribe to The Athletic through the 11 Personnel podcast, you get my favorite thing in the world, which is a great discount every single time. Spent a lot of time praising Rams fans, subscribers, and listeners here throughout this podcast, and I mean every word. You guys have been fantastic. Really, really enjoy the continued dialogue that we've had over these last couple of years. Going to be a lot to come. This is going to be a pivotal year, I think, for the Rams as they try to repeat, as they certainly remain in contention. And there's going to be a lot of great coverage coming your way, both here and at theathletic.com. So we will catch you next week. And in the meantime, we hope you enjoyed this episode. We appreciate you listening.
Hey, hey. Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.